If you're anything like me, you spent your childhood assuming that one day you'd meet your Prince Charming. You'd get married, you'd have a nice house in the suburbs, a dog, a career, and a couple of kids. It never crossed your mind that Prince Charming wouldn't come along, or that tragically you'd lose him before his time, or that your marriage wouldn't work out, or even that your biological clock would have other ideas. Or maybe you never really wanted that sort of happily ever after. Maybe you never wanted a man, but you did know you always wanted children. We're living in an age where, for the first time, women can embrace motherhood on their own terms. They no longer have to put their lives on hold waiting for the right man, or settling for someone who they know isn't right for them, just so they can become a mother. More women than ever before are embarking on the journey to become what's known as a solo mother by choice. And while for a lot of us it doesn't feel like a choice, but more a necessity, the bottom line is there are now options for you to be able to fulfill your dreams of motherhood if the traditional route isn't playing out as expected. The No Need for Prince Charming podcast will share stories of Australian women who have successfully become solo mothers by choice. They each have a unique story as to why they decided to pursue motherhood in this way, and the journey they had to go through to make this dream a reality. The hope is that by sharing these stories, you'll have the knowledge and the confidence to embark on this amazing journey yourself, if you determine it's the right one for you. In the words of Walt Disney, all of our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. All you need is faith, trust, and a little bit of pixie dust. So welcome to the special bonus episode of the podcast. Today I am joined by the very gorgeous Sam, who is going to talk to us all about doulas and how they can be helpful pre, during, and post people becoming mums. So welcome, Sam. I would love to start with just understanding a little bit about you and what drew you to becoming a doula.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to chat with you and discuss doula support more broadly. I have been a doula for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. Doula is essentially a non-medical support person, so a little bit like a coach during your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. Some doulas just work postnatally, some doulas just work with pregnancy and birth, and some doulas do the whole range. I'm one of those last category.
I do it all.
And I became a doula mostly because I benefited from doula support myself. So my children, I have four children, and they are currently between the ages of 18 and 22. No twins in there. Just knocked them out. Yep. Very grateful to have been able to do that from a fertility perspective as well. Like, that was our plan, and luckily that's what we managed to do. And when I had my first baby, we were doing our childbirth education classes, and our educator on our last session sort of said, you know, I'm just starting to do this thing. And this is 23 years ago. Just started to do this thing. And this is what it is. And if you're interested, let me know. And if you're not, don't worry about it. And I was like, immediately, yes. Why wouldn't I want more support? And especially support that knows what they're doing. Because, like, no offense to my husband, he doesn't know what he's doing either. So, like, it's just the blind leading the blind for us. And, despite our childbirth education to date. And it was amazing. I had wonderful support during my labors. My labors were very positive experiences. And when I came to think about what I wanted to do with my life, we moved countries a few times, basically. And then once we'd all settled down and I didn't want to go back to finance, which is what I used to do. I thought about what I wanted to do. My births were really positive experiences. And if I could share that with other families, then that is what I wanted to do.
So tell us, what actually is a doula? What services can they offer? And what should someone expect when they are using a doula?
Sure. So if you're working with a doula during your pregnancy, with the view to having birth support, then your doula is a non-medical coach. So we provide practical, informational, and emotional support during that time. So we're a pretty good point of non-medical continuity of care. Mm-hmm. And people often engage a doula if they haven't been able to access a medical care model that involves continuity of care. But even if they have, so with an obstetrician or with a group practice midwife at the hospital or a home birth midwife, so all of those are examples of medical continuity of care. But even if they have, we can still be the person that you can reach out to, we're the ones that spend in between appointments, and we're the ones that spend time with you answering questions and really get to know you. So your midwife or your obstetrician often just spends 15 minutes with you, maybe once a month during your pregnancy and a bit more frequently towards the end. We're the ones that if you've seen something online that you're not sure about, if your mother-in-law has told you something or your mum has told you something that doesn't make sense to you, or is that right, or is this just outdated advice? Yeah, you've read something, you've seen something, something's come up in your appointment, your obstetrician has talked to you about a test that's coming up and you're not quite sure of pros and cons of taking it. We wouldn't give you advice around it, but we can definitely be that sounding board and discuss the pros and cons and help you come to decisions that feel right for you during your pregnancy. We also prepare you for labor, so we can talk about coping mechanisms, comfort measures, work on your breathing, think about positioning, get your mindset a little bit, hopefully a little bit more confident going in, understanding the process a bit better, and then obviously supporting you on the day that you meet your baby. I actually supported a beautiful solo mum 1 week ago today, and she had the most amazing birth.
So would that be that I go into spontaneous labor and I ring you up and go, ah, it's all on, and you would meet me at the hospital and be
It's
there?
on. It's on. So yeah. Essentially, yes. Well, yeah, I have been the primary sort of partner for solo mums from time to time, for sure. And then postnatally, we're a bit more of that person who comes and helps to encourage you and reassure you in your parenting. So I'm not a fan as a doula. Like, I'll never come up and tell you what to do. I always say I can probably show you three ways to do just about anything, and you'll know which one is right for you and your family. So yeah, very often we feel like we don't know what we're doing, but actually we do. So it's much, it's really often, I would say 80% of my work postnatally is reassuring the mum that she's got it right, because she does most of the time. And it can be practical help as well. I'm a feeder, so I always bring food. Good nourishment fixes a lot of things. And so having good, consistent, healing food in your postpartum is important. Having someone who will just come and clear the surfaces, unstack the dishwasher, run a load of laundry, maybe run the vacuum round, let you have a bit of a sleep while someone that you trust has your baby, all of that is important.
Sounds like the dream. Oh, wish I'd known you existed when I had my daughter.
But it's not, sometimes we have problematic relationships with our families, and we don't want, I never wanted my mum coming and telling me what to do. So, or how to do it, like that would have been my worst nightmare. So having someone who doesn't judge you, who you don't have like baggage in your relationship with, I am, often people can be more vulnerable with me than they can with their family members, because I serve a specific role in people's lives, and it's normally a temporary role as well. So yeah, I'm there for a specific purpose, just to really encourage them and love on them a little bit. And yeah.
Yeah, a really wonderful purpose. So, do you support all types of births? So, home births, cesareans, everything like that?
I am as happy to, I'm equally happy at a home birth. I had three of my four children at home, as I am with a planned cesarean birth, like the whole spectrum. What matters to me is that you experience your birth as positive, and that you're making decisions from a place of empowerment and choosing things that are positive for you. That's, I had my babies exactly how I wanted to, and that's what I want for my clients.
I'm sure you've been in situations where the birth isn't going to plan and maybe it turns into an emergency C-section. How have you found that you're a good support during that situation for those mums?
So for me, I mean, a lot of people work with a doula thinking about the day, obviously, so the day they get the baby. But for me, most of my value comes before that day, and that's all in the preparation. So we don't just look at plan A, we look at what an induction might look and feel like. We look at what a cesarean birth would look and feel like, and how we can still make them positive experiences. I am of the belief that even if it's not your ideal pathway to meet your baby, you can still meet them positively. I've got clients who's, I'm thinking of one in particular many years ago, whose client, her birth went so far off track, but she still speaks about it very positively. because at every point she felt not exactly in control, but she always felt like she was able to make decisions and that things didn't overtake her, the day didn't get away from her, kind of thing. She didn't feel like things were done to her. She always felt like she was had choices and she made those choices. So for me, that's part of what creates a positive experience.
I think that's one of the biggest things from doing so many interviews with women who have been down this path, that a lot of them learn to advocate for themselves and they wish that they knew that they could advocate for themselves. I guess if they're not confident, you can help be that voice for them and help tell them what their options can be so they can.
Yeah, you don't just have to. I said this the other day actually on Instagram, like you don't just have to prepare for the labor, you have to prepare for the hospital because the hospital has policies, recommendations, like it's a system that you're birthing in, and you have to see it for what it is and understand your options going in as well as what can happen on the day.
What do you think is probably the biggest area currently that people don't understand going into this when it comes to the systems that you wish
Induction.
more of? Induction?
What's your induction? More than in Sydney, and it would be true in other major cities in Australia, more than 50% of first-time mums are induced, and they're not induced with proper information either. So they don't understand how common it is.
Yeah.
You talk to a lot of women, anecdotally, you'll get a feel for it. I was talking to a client yesterday that is due to have a baby in April, and we talked about she was induced last time. And she said, yeah, when I talked to the women in my office after meeting my baby, everyone was induced. I was like, well, that's, 50% are induced. And let's say another 15% maybe would have had a planned cesarean. How many women are going into spontaneous labor with their first babies? Not many.
Do you think
Not.
that's changed and why that's changed?
It has changed. The induction rate has gone up massively in the last 20 years, and it's mostly because hospitals are managing their resources. If they know they can get a woman in at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning, get the labor started, hopefully have a baby that night, then they can allocate beds, rooms, midwives, theatre time potentially, rather than, women with their unpredictable bodies walking in at unpredictable times of day.
Which they all do on the movies, and it also
That's
sounds
right. Yeah. Done the
horrible.
day and night. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little bit, but it's partly resource management. It's partly there's an increase in just general management for birth because, from a risk management perspective, they view, women are unpredictable and with individual bodies and just, like to be able to feel like they have some control over a process, I would say.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
definitely see through doing this podcast, a lot of people are induced, and a lot of people have been told, whether rightly or wrongly, that because they are IVF, they are deemed as high risk and they have therefore have to be induced. But for a lot of these women, it's not because of fertility that they've had to do IVF, it's because they
That's
don't have
right.
a problem.
That's
So
right.
if
It's
I'm in that
what
situation.
I say to I still, so I talk to my solo mums and also my same-sex couples about that. You haven't necessarily had IUI or IVF because of a fertility issue or other potential health concerns. It's a matter of logistics, mostly. Unless there are other things going on, but it's not because of that. It's because of logistics. So sometimes with IVF, for on a population level, women might also tick another one or two boxes that the hospital might deem as risk factors. And then when you tick two or more of those boxes, that creates what they like to call a picture. And so, then they'll start to make sort of recommendations. But the second you tick an IVF box, they are like, well, we can't possibly let you go past 40 weeks. And the language is problematic there as well. Because it is, to be completely fair to the hospitals, their job to make recommendations, and it is the woman's job to make decisions.
I think a lot of women don't feel like they can go against that. Do you think?
I think that's fair, especially when you don't really understand. It's always a good question to ask what the policy is based on. Because some policies, you can actually look them up. Some policies are based on population recommendations, and some policies are based on evidence. They're not always based on evidence. Also, they might not be based on current evidence. So it takes about 15 to 17 years to change a policy in a hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those people having IVF 15, 17 years ago, they were just fertility issues.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, it's, They are good questions to ask. Like, all right, I understand this recommendation. Can you tell me where it comes from? What is that policy based on? Like, what kind of evidence is it sitting on top of? And then you can make a more informed decision for yourself. Also, women are not counseled properly about induction. Like, they're told, oh, we have to do this. And it's no problem. Just come in and we'll get your labor started and we'll meet your baby. And they aren't told that it creates a labor that's more painful, potentially, and that maybe you might have pain relief that you're not anti hoping to have. Like, an epidural is a very realistic part of an induction, for instance, and that creates complications of its own.
Yeah, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but what is the rate of induction to emergency C-section? Because a lot of people that I talk to who have inductions end up with an emergency C-section.
There was a piece of research that came out a few years ago from Western Sydney Uni, and it basically said, and there's varying research on this topic. There was a piece of research, you can cherry pick research all day, but to give you the range, Hannah Darling's research out of Western Sydney, I think, said it doubles your rate of your risk of having a cesarean versus a spontaneous physiological labor. There is something called the ARRIVE trial, which private obstetricians are obsessed with, and that said that if you were 39 weeks, there was no increase in intervention with an induction. And they'll always have the ARRIVE trial, the ARRIVE trial. The average age of the women in the ARRIVE trial was 23.
Oh.
For one thing. For another, they were
Who
low
has
risk for
babies back then? What?
right? Children. And then they were all low risk women, so they had no medical risk factors. There's no IVF in there, I can tell you that for nothing. And they were in a practice that had a 22% cesarean rate. Now, every hospital in Sydney has a cesarean rate that is in excess of 35%.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Almost, so it's already in a practice that was very, very loath to take you to theatre. Like, they just didn't do a lot of cesareans versus the national average. So it's almost half the national average in America. So they were birthing in a place that didn't do many cesareans. They were all low-risk women and they were very young compared to the average population of women giving birth. So unless you're a low-risk 23-year-old giving birth in a place with a half the rate of cesarean versus the national average, the ARRIVE trial doesn't apply to you. But a lot of private will wave it around.
Probably not too
And
many of those listening to my podcast, I would say.
right. So, yeah, so if anyone is quoting studies at you, if anyone is making recommendations based on policy, ask questions about it. Don't be afraid to do that. This is your medical health care. If someone was recommending surgery, you'd probably ask for a second opinion before committing to it, right? We don't do that when we're pregnant for some reason.
Now, mine was just all a bit of a shock, and I'm just like, don't just care about whatever you need to do.
For sure. And sometimes it's hard with an IVF pregnancy because it's such a process. You would never, they're just a little bit extra precious almost sometimes. I feel like every pregnancy is precious, but it's harder to become pregnant when you have that kind of process or logistical thing to go through to be able to have another baby.
Yeah, so it's just so important that you trust your team that's supporting you. And if you could get someone like yourself in the room to help educate on what the options are.
And there's no right or wrong answer. That's what I like to say to my clients. It's only what's right for you. And people will come at the same recommendation with different decisions
Yeah.
because we all come at this with different life journeys, different views on risk, different values. Like, I always, when I teach, I sort of say, some people jump out of planes for fun on a weekend, like, and go skydiving. Not on my best day would I do that. Not, and especially, I don't think that's a good time. But yeah, we all do different things. Yeah.
So thinking about it, is there any advice that might be more solo mum specific than what you'd normally give, like maybe different to a couple?
Yeah, so particularly asking questions earlier in your pregnancy around, because often these induction discussions, even with a couple, don't come up until you are at the end of your pregnancy and then you're vulnerable. You're very vulnerable when you're in your last month of pregnancy. So have these difficult decisions or di difficult or more challenging discussions earlier in your pregnancy if you can, because they're coming for you anyway. The conversations are at least. So do it while you still feel well and not tired and open and, emotionally a little bit more more challenged. In terms of single mum specific, I would say have a plan for early labor. So especially if you're working with a doula. So a doula cannot realistically be with you for all of the time. So when I'm working with a couple, I normally come when labor feels like it's starting to get regular and established. And sometimes that's kind of around the 5 minute mark. That might be 6, 7 hours into it at that point. So have someone or a few people that you can call on, depending on the time of day, that can come and be with you. They don't necessarily need to, early labor is quite manageable, but it shouldn't really happen by yourself because you won't necessarily feel safe if someone's not with you. So have a family member or a friend if you can, if you're living alone, to come with you for that earlier phase and then tag us in terms of doula support. I would consider your postnatal support system is more important when you're, doing a solo journey versus ha as a couple. In particular, things like, for a couple, very often with things like postpartum anxiety or postpartum depression, partners will see it before the mum realizes what's going on inside her. So, who's watching you? Who's regularly visiting you?
Good
And
point.
just eyeballing you and making sure that you're, yes, it's inevitably challenging. It's an emotional first few weeks in particular, and all of that's within normal range. But who's coming and making sure on a regular basis that you're like okay from that perspective. I would also think about who's telling you you're doing a good job. Like, I think solo mums are amazing and they're very resilient and independent and they're used and they're doers. Like, they're just used to doing shit for themselves, right? But there's pros and cons. No one's doing a 2 a.m. feed for you, but also you don't have to navigate anyone else's feelings or manage a relationship on top of getting to know your baby. So, like, I just don't think one's easier than the other necessarily. But what women in a relationship have is someone telling them, this is the advice I give to partners anyway. Tell her she's doing a good job. Tell her like 10 times a day because you doubt yourself as a new mum. So, so who's doing that for you? Or how can you put reminders on your phone or have affirmation cards, postpartum affirmation phrases around your home that reinforce that you are doing a good job because you will be. But we don't feel like it.
All a bit overwhelming, isn't it? In terms of
Yes, I would also say, and I do talk to couples about this too, but also have a list of phone numbers before you meet your baby of who to call in particular situations. So have a lactation consultant on speed dial if breastfeeding is important to you. Know what your local kind of health direct services, telehealth services are. What's the phone number of your nearest emergency department? Who do you call if you don't think things are okay? Like, where are you, who are your friends? Who are your, more broader social supports, but also like who do you call medically if you're worried? Because you don't have the bandwidth to find that information postnatally. Like, have it all set up ahead of time. common things to look out for. Mastitis. In the first month in particular is something to look out for. Can come on very quickly, so signs of flu and cold and things like that. Again, if there was a partner, he might sort of flag it before you feel it, sort of thing. If you're just,
We just get on, get on, get on, don't we?
yeah, exactly. And there is that whole kind of, I was talking to a mum about this yesterday, social conditioning of once we become mothers, there's social conditioning around what I call the martyrdom of motherhood, like putting everyone else's needs before ourselves or before our own. And so prioritizing the baby and minimizing how we're feeling. So self-care is very important. It's important for all mums, but particularly for solo mums, because we have to fill our own cups.
How long would you normally be coming to a new mum's home in that postpartum time to help support do that and help them hopefully achieve some self-care as well?
So I really specialize in the first 3 months of life, for a new family. Once we get to about the 12-week mark, like it's a really bumpy first 6 weeks, normally. We're starting to level out milk supply if breastfeeding has leveled out by about the 6 week mark, 6 to 8 weeks. But then you, as a mother, you feel a bit more like yourself at around the 12-week mark. So not, and sleep is not uninterrupted, but it is consistent, more consistent around the 12-week mark as well. So often those first 3 months, I have worked with families for 6 months or 9 months. I do have a client who I still see 3.5 years later. So it's, yeah, so that's, yeah, the service has morphed a little bit for her. Yeah, so yes, but generally speaking, a postpartum doula really is that kind of fourth trimester, I guess, those first 3 months, typically. And every doula provides different kind of service and will package things up differently for you as well. So like on my website, for instance, there's a package for 3 visits or 10 visits. And, you know, I would happily put together, and other doulas would as well, which is why I'm kind of using this as an example, a different number of packages. Often for me, if someone's bought like a 10 visit package and they've used that up in the first sort of 2 or 3 weeks, then I just roll on to like a monthly, I'll just bill you at the end of the month sort of thing. We'll use what you've been using and play it by ear and see how we're going and what's useful and those sorts of things. Yeah.
So, is there any advice for someone who's looking for a doula, what they should be looking for?
How you mostly that for me, primarily how you feel when you meet them. So pay attention to your gut because you will know. Like I had this question, I was chatting on a podcast yesterday with a client of mine actually, and she's like, but what should people ask? I do have four, many years ago I wrote a blog post about questions to ask a doula, so people can look on my website for that if they'd like to. It's mostly focused at birth doulas, but primarily because this yesterday the interviewer was like, but how do you know, how do you know, how do you know they're going to be good on the day, like what questions do you ask? I said, but how do you feel when you're with them? That's the most important thing. Like I have lots of technical knowledge, but if I'm not the right person for you, all my technical knowledge doesn't matter. Because if you don't feel safe with me, if you don't feel calm when you're around me, that's it doesn't matter the special tricks I know. Because if you're not, if you're on a ner if your nervous system doesn't feel safe, that's the first thing that needs to happen. So yeah, pay attention to your gut. Primarily, like the connection has to be there.
For anyone, you'd suggest that they meet first before engaging the services officially?
Yeah, and that's true for birth or postpartum. So I don't think a stranger should be walking into your house when you're postpartum. If you've only engaged someone for your postpartum period, they shouldn't be a stranger to you to walk in and then care for you. Like that, you're very vulnerable. These are intimate and vulnerable journeys. So, for me, an in-person meeting is important. Not all doulas do that. I know some doulas are really just doing interviews by Zoom currently. And if that's okay with you, that's okay. But you know, I'm always like, next steps, let's have a cup of coffee. Like even if I feel it over the phone, like I think it'll be a good fit. I always like to have an in-person meet personally.
And I'm assuming that you'd only take on a certain number of clients at a time so that you don't have a risk of too often that they're both giving birth at the same time or something like that.
Everyone worries about this. Solo mums or partnered couples. Yes. So I try to limit my birth support, especially, and I am being better about it this year, to two, sometimes three births in a calendar month. That's like my boundary with the universe. This is as woo as I get. So I'm not attached to due dates. I wouldn't maybe take three clients due in the same week, but I would for sure take two in due in the same week. Babies will do what they want. So I had last April, I had four babies due within the month of April. One family gave birth spontaneously at 36 weeks in March, and two families left it till almost 42 weeks in May. So then I only ended up with one baby in
Wow.
April.
Yeah, screwed up your May because you got
I'll
two
do what I
extra.
want. Yeah. So yeah, so that's my thing is that's my goal anyway, is to keep it to two, sometimes three in a month. Yeah, it's very hard though when I get messages from women saying, you know, oh, you know, I'm due on this date, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm already booked out. I do know lots of other doulas that I can refer to. So yeah, I have to be better about about looking after myself and them. Yeah.
And would you expect that a doula might be going to some of the appointments pre-birth as well, or it's only really just on the day that they're giving birth and it'd be all separate appointments?
I personally am very happy to go to one or two appointments during pregnancy, especially if they are coming up to like the birth plan appointment, taking the birth plan in and chatting it through, for instance. Or if I have had clients in the past call me up one or two crying because maybe their care provider has been so horrible to them. And pre-COVID, for sure, I went to more appointments, and then COVID happened and I just got really out of the habit of it. But yeah, if they're getting aggressive care, let's say, or forceful care, literally, and I wish it wasn't true. I've had some women be terribly spoken to in appointments, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll come and let's see what's going on. And I don't even have to say anything, literally, in the appointment for it to be a very different experience.
Just because you're
So,
there.
because I'm there, and the midwife or the obstetrician knows that I know how they should be speaking to someone and what a reasonable recommendation is. Yeah. Like it's, yeah. It's not okay sometimes. And I don't even have to say a word or do any advocacy at all. It's just the fact I'm sat there looking at them. And we'll leave the appointment on my client. I'll be like, well, I don't know what happened there. I said, I do.
That made me out to be a liar. Ah.
Yeah. Well, don't worry about it, love. I know how it went down.
I believe.
Yeah, so yeah, the birth planning appointment. Some obstetricians like for the doula to come in so that everyone who will be in the room on the day has met before in the same space. So even if it's obstetricians that I work with regularly in the private health system, it's nice. We obviously haven't worked together with this particular family. So coming in and getting everyone who will be in the room in the same room before meeting baby is always useful as well.
And how
So,
early in a pregnancy do you think that someone should be engaging with a doula if they're going to use one?
I think if they have a particular doula in mind, you can't call them too early. I've had several people even contact me planning pregnancy.
Okay.
So if there's someone that you follow or someone that's been recommended to you and you like the look of their service, then definitely reach out when you're newly pregnant, even. I've had people send me photos of their pregnancy test. I've had, like, this is happening.
Happening, booking you in now.
You now, please pencil me in. And then, I am always happy to pencil people in. And then when they've had their kind of 12, 13 week sort of scans and reassurance around the viability of the pregnancy, truthfully, then we confirm things at that point. So that's no problem. So yes, I often am booked within the 6 to 12 week mark. There are sometimes times when I have availability further down the track. But yeah, currently we're what in the middle of February almost, and I'm currently booked out until August.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I have to plan my holidays like a year ahead and all those sorts of
Please don't go early. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about doula support, there will always be doulas that have availability later in your pregnancy. But if you're thinking about someone specific, don't be shy about reaching out. I have lots of, inquiries sometimes that sort of phrase, I know this is probably early. And I'm like, babe, it's actually not.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, you're good.
So, bit of a sad topic, but if a pregnancy isn't viable or a baby is lost, can you offer support for those situations as well?
Absolutely. And also postpartum as well, because, particularly if it's a later loss or a mid-pregnancy or a later loss, you have still given birth and your body is still in a fourth trimester, essentially. So care and respectful care and a listening, a neutral listening ear can be especially helpful in those circumstances as well. Hospitals will put you in touch with counseling services and offer specific support for those journeys as well. But there's not much follow-up once you're home.
There's not.
And yeah. So really being able to feel validated in your birth when some people find it really hard to talk about, like in terms of your broader support system, your family or your friends. And it might feel hard to, sometimes we need to have the same conversations several times to process an experience. And having someone who will sit with you and listen and listen and hold you while you're crying. And yes, and not try and make it better for you, because you can't anyway. But it's very tempting when the people that love us in our lives, they just want you to be okay, and you're not. And it's hard for them sometimes to be around it because of that.
They just want to fix it and they can't.
So I'll always put the, let's say I'll, it's not my job to hand you the tissues, but it's my job to have tissues for you.
I like it. I like it.
And equally, not all birth journeys, at full-term birth journeys, are positive ones. Or, people can have grief around how it played out. And having a doula doesn't guarantee you a positive birth experience. But what it does give you, if things don't go as you wanted and you have trauma or grief around that, it does offer you a soft place to land.
You obviously get to support thousands of women to give babies. Do you get like a massive adrenaline rush every time that little one comes out and you get to see the skin to skin and see that mum with her new baby?
When it's going within the broad pathway that my clients wanted, absolutely, yes. But like I said, it's not always a beautifully oxytocin filled day. Oh, that's the other thing, going back to solo mum specific birth preparation, is we have to find sometimes alternative ways to build that oxytocin in our kind of pre-birth journey and on the day as well, because we don't have like partner touch, for instance, or really building that oxytocin for us. So yeah, there are other kind of specific techniques that I cover with solo mums.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
But yes, so when it's, yeah, it is. It's wonderful. It's very, very rewarding. So being a doula is not without its challenges, let's say, but the rewards definitely outweigh those challenges for sure. It's beautiful. It's wonderful to work with women and families that might be apprehensive or nervous or scared coming into it, and sort of guiding them towards a really empowering experience of meeting their baby and parenting them.
Brilliant. And if there's anyone pregnant now or just about to get pregnant, what's the one piece of advice you want to leave them with?
I would say, don't have any expectations of yourself or your family. And I mean family as you and your baby, not your ex, not also maybe your extended family. I don't know how it's going to go with them, but but I was thinking about this morning actually, when, so I used to be an accountant prior to having my children, and it suited me down to the ground because I was a very controlling A-type personality prior to having my four children, which have knocked quite a lot of that out of me.
Again, lots
And
of mums are in that camp too.
So, and I had this, I read this book, and it was written by a woman called Gina Ford in England and in the UK. And it was highly structured for as a postpartum plan. I cannot tell you, militarily structured. And I was like, amazing. I made my husband read it. I was like, get on board. This is what we're doing when this baby arrives. He's like, okay. And they put my oldest son on my chest, and I looked at him and I was like, well, we're not doing any of that. And we're just going to work it out together. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, mate, but we'll work it out, you and me. And my poor husband spent the first 2 weeks of Rory's life saying, Gina says we should be doing this, and Gina says we should be doing that. And I'm like, don't mention that woman's name to me anymore. I'm sorry I made you read the book. We're not doing that. And he was
Gina is no longer in our lives.
right. Gina, don't speak to me about Gina. And he was only supporting me in the way that I had asked him to. But I expected my postpartum to fit like this, just for things to slot into this plan. And when my baby arrived, it's not what I wanted at all. And so I would say, be gentle with yourself and be kind to yourself. And often we're not kind to ourselves anyway. So really try and practice that ahead of time and try and surrender to your birth and your baby. I think that's my biggest advice, especially for those first 6 weeks. The journey might not be what you think it is.
We all put so much pressure on what our expectations are or what it's going to be. And sometimes you can miss out on the magic of it because it's not going that way as well, can't you?
So it's when you, and I suffered with that quite a lot, again, that type A personality in my postpartum. I had a 6 week visit in the UK from like a health nurse, and I'll never forget it. She put her hand on my shoulder and she said, "And how are you doing?" And I burst into tears.
Oh.
Out of nowhere, I wasn't expecting that at all. But that kind of physical touch and that real check-in was like, "Oh my God, I'm actually doing terribly." And she's like, "Oh," and she's like, "Remind me what you do for a job." I was like, "I'm an accountant." And she's like, "Yeah."
This is not just numbers on a spreadsheet. You cannot control
As a professional woman, you have a lot of control in your life, and you're good at what you do, right? We feel competent in our jobs. We're very goal oriented, so we achieve things. We feel like we achieve things, and we have a very defined sense of who we are and with our professional hat on and all of those sorts of things. And then we enter this very fluid postpartum period where we're not like achieving something is having a shower that day, like literally. So I don't feel like I've achieved anything, even though my baby's alive and that's actually the goal. Like he and I are okay. We don't have a sense of ourselves because internally we've had a huge emotional expansion, and we don't recognize our bodies are leaking in various places. We don't recognize ourselves emotionally. We're not achieving anything in our day. Our days are very unstructured. We don't feel good at what we do because our learning curve is vertical. Like there's so much that happens in those first 6 weeks, especially for women who, are professional in their life, or they are feel, competent and independent, and suddenly this baby comes into our lives and we're in a postpartum period that we don't recognize and we haven't prepared well for. So many people prepare for the birth. They do not think past that.
Yeah.
And it's fair enough, but please consider your postpartum.
There any key things that you think they should be doing to prepare for that besides getting a doula?
Think about the first 12 weeks, not the first 4 weeks. So, quite commonly, if feeding is going well, in the first 2 weeks, a baby will just feed and sleep. And then I meet with a lot of parents after their birth in the first few weeks, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, no, we've got a really good baby." And I'm like, "Amazing. I hope that is always," by good, they mean he sleeps all the time. And I'm like, "Great. I hope that's always true for you. But remember, we talked about this." And your baby will start to like be awake for longer periods and, peak kind of, peak traditionally peak unsettled periods are between the 6 to 8 week mark. I get a lot of calls around that time. So yeah, really think about the first 12 weeks in terms of food, in terms of extra support. And that can be getting a cleaner in once a week if that's not what you already have. Food service of some kind, just at least for like half of the time to take the edge off that kind of need for you. Think about lactation support because birth, like a baby is coming out of your body one way or another. So birth is a spontaneous event, but feeding is more of a learning journey with you and your baby. And it can go off track in the first few weeks. It doesn't mean that it's the end of your journey, but we might need some support to bring it back. Yeah. Also look into how much rest a newborn mum needs. So I always, there's a whole advice of like sleep when the baby sleeps, but that's hard to do when your nervous system is very heightened and you're on high alert for your newborn as a mother. So rest when the baby sleeps is the next best thing. So at least do that. And look into how you can nutritionally support yourself post in your postpartum. There's a lot of healing you can do with the right sort of rest, hydration, nourishing foods, or appropriate foods. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? You've also got to heal your body as well. It's been through so much trauma pushing out or having massive of surgery, however you ended up doing it.
Either way, it's massive blood loss. It's huge hormonal swings, and there is a recovery that's involved. And a lot of women are like, especially if you've had a birth, that I give this speech to mums who've had like their dream birth, if you like, that you're going to think you're superwoman and you're going to like feel like you can do anything in your first week. Absolutely not. Keep your feet up and stay in bed or at least stay on the sofa and as much as you can. We have to keep our feet up. There's a pre-pregnant uterus weighs about 80 grams, and an immediately postpartum uterus with no baby in it weighs over a kilo,
Oh,
no matter how
wow.
you. So there's still a lot of draw on your pelvic floor. A lot of women, the prolapse that happens later in life is because women are too active in that first 4 weeks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Put your feet up, ladies. Put your feet up.
Put your feet up, take your weight off your vagina.
Love that. Might have to put that as a quote for selling this Is there anything else that you want to cover that we haven't talked about so far?
No, I would say probably in terms of doula support, I'm sensitive to the fact that it's an extra cost, and it's maybe a cost that when you've had an expensive IVF journey and you've got one income that you need to either budget for or think about. So a lot of doulas would be open to a payment plan. For instance, there are other ways you can finance your doula support, have it as a baby shower option for people to contribute to. But I would, think about, I would definitely consider having a doula. I always had doulas when I gave birth, even though I also had my partner, because I think we shouldn't be doing it alone. And by alone, I mean with a midwife or an obstetrician. We don't know. Obstetricians, you only see them for that last half an hour anyway. But we're not, if we were giving birth 200 years ago, we'd be in a room full of women with experience of birth. And we would be mothered by our community in our postpartum. So, and that's what we are socially, that's what should happen, I think. But we live in a very isolated Western society. And yeah, so really, really consider your support systems.
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, if finance is a challenge or you only want one part, that the most important part could actually be that postpartum, where you've
So.
got lots of support up to birth, but if you need just one, that's where you can make a real difference to make sure that you're okay.
I always use a wedding analogy because the thing is, the mum will always look after the baby. The baby's fine.
Yeah.
People always say to me, "Oh, you must love babies." Sure, like who doesn't love babies? But I love mums. But like that's where my focus is. So yeah, people think I'm a doula because I love babies. Absolutely, like sure, but not really.
It's all about the mum.
It is, and it's all about, for me, it's all about that transition and guiding and coaching and supporting them around that.
Yeah, you can't
Yeah.
underestimate how much of a change just becoming a mum has on you overall. So having that goddess at the time to help support that is
Yeah.
invaluable by the sounds, and I wish I'd had it.
I do too. I resourced my births really well, but I did not resource my postpartum. I shielded myself a lot postnatally, so I should be able to look after my own baby. I should be able to manage, I should be able to cope. And should I completely remove that from my client's vocabulary? Because it's very judgy, even when we say it to ourselves. Yeah.
Well, this has been very insightful. I will not need a doula service again because I'm never having another one. But if I did, I would definitely be engaging, especially for postpartum. And I hope that this has been useful for everyone who is about to get pregnant or is currently pregnant and it can help make a difference for them.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for your time, Sam.
Welcome. It's lovely to chat.
I'm Alicia, and this is the No Need for Prince Charming podcast, bringing you stories of Australian solo mums who created their own happy ending. If you like what you heard, please follow or subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, and leave a like, a review, or share with your friends to help others find it easier. Bye for now.